This is the Rain Report for March 23, 2007. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP. This week, we delve into the Rain archives and blow the dust off several items that were aired during the Rain Report back in 2004.
Gordon West, WB6NOA, has become one of ham radio's greatest cheerleaders and writers. Gordo and fellow CQVHF columnist Ken Newbeck, WB2AMU, author of 6 Meters, The Magic Band, have teamed up to put out a book about VHF propagation. This softcover CQ Communications publication is entitled VHF Propagation, A Practical Guide for Radio Amateurs. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, managed to catch up with Gordon, a feat in itself, to learn more about his new book.
Ken and I have been together for some time on the air, talking regularly on 6 Meters from coast to coast, Hap, during band openings. And it was at a event about 2 years ago in New York, sponsored by the Long Island Amateur Radio Club, that we decided we needed to do more than talk about 6 meters and 2 meters propagation to our students, but actually demonstrate to them how some of these sounds could go so far over the airwaves. So first of all, Ken has a tremendous amount of knowledge on the 6 meter band. So he pulled together all of his past records and talked all about 6 meter band openings. And because I did a lot on 2 meters and higher, I pulled together my record. So between the two of us, we explain how long-haul propagation for the 6 and 2 meter and higher bands take place. There have been some excellent VHF and UHF propagations published in the past. And of course, the RSGB book on VHF and UHF propagation from England is one of the top-notch books. All of the books in the past have been very, very technical, and they do an excellent job for the technical reader to describe how some of the propagation characteristics take place. But we found that today's radio operators want to know more how to take advantage of this propagation as to the density of the ionosphere and more of the hard-to-visualize areas to understand. So the way we wrote the book is in a very light and airy way to explain all the technical sides of long-range propagation on 6 meters, 2 meters, and the higher bands, but not in an overly technical way, but we do give plenty of technical charts in the book for those that want to get technical. There are plenty of drawings, plenty of charts, plenty of band-by-band guides, plenty of operating aids to visualize exactly when and where long-range propagation might occur on each one of these bands. CQ, from what we have seen in the past, has had a terrific lineup of how-to books, how to get the most out of ham radio. And they've had some good books in the past on VHF and UHF propagation, but these books were, to our knowledge, about 10 to 20 years old, and what we wanted to do was to bring a fresh new look at VHF and UHF propagation and talk more about some of the things that have happened near future, as well as some of the things that have happened just a few months ago that we've not had printed in the past. We've learned a lot more about the peak of solar cycle 23. We've learned a lot more about VHF and UHF propagation via aurora, thanks to the University of Fairbanks, Alaska, that have made to us some great propagation studies. We've learned a lot about what happens up in the ionosphere, thanks to the high-altitude aurora research project. That's the HARP project. We've combined some of these newer found information into the new book.
You know, I've read about the HARP project a little bit, but don't know much about it. How does that tie in with VHF propagation?
It ties in with their investigations of the ionosphere at different frequencies. And about 4 years ago, I had an opportunity of going up to the HARP facility and actually seeing how they monitored some of their very powerful radio signals via spectrum analyzer. And it was through my tour of HARP that gave me a good idea as to what happens at signals at 50 megahertz and higher as they enter the ionosphere, all about radio refraction at its best.
How large is the book, Gordo, and can you give me an idea of what the format is like?
The book, HAP, is about 125 pages, and it is your typical bigger than a pocketbook, about a 5x7 format. And the book is laid out in individual chapters that first talks about the troposphere and the ionosphere. Then we talk about what line of sight is and how to calculate line of sight. And then the book goes right into the study of 6 meters, 2 meters, 222, 432, 1200 and higher as those bands propagate either off of tropospheric ducting, sporadic E, aurora, meteor scatter, the F2 layer, transequatorial propagation, even signals that bounce around off of the AMSAT satellites that are up in space.
Hap Holly, KC9RP, speaking with Gordon West, WB6NOA, co-author of VHF Propagation, A Practical Guide for Radio Amateurs, published by CQ Communications.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
We conclude this week's Rain Report with some levity passed along to us from Art Householder, K9TRG. Some of you will remember Art as being one of the owners of Spectronics, the Chicago ham radio store that was such a popular spot to shop for ham gear back when Hap Holly moved from Escondido, California to Des Plaines, Illinois in 1974. Here is Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, to read Art's piece called My Antenna is Better Than Yours.
And now this humorous item passed along to us by Art Householder, K9TRG. Art writes, "This was written and published many years ago, and I just found it again. For those that don't remember it, have fun with it. I've won many beers telling this story and being challenged and then proving I'm right. My mobile antenna is 20 dB better than yours. This true story happened approximately 33 years ago. I will try to relate it as accurately as my old memory will allow. The facts are just as true and interesting today as they were then. We were hosting the FM Hospitality Room at the SAROC Hamfest in Las Vegas, as we had for several years, and the conversation got around to mobile antennas for the 2-meter band. Everyone had their idea as to which gain antenna was the best. As an aside, there really weren't very many to choose from back then. Someone asked me what kind I was running, and I replied, just a 5/8 gain antenna, but my antenna would outperform theirs by approximately 20 dB. Boy, did I get some funny looks. Then I commented that we could test their antenna against mine. We could use their vehicle or mine. We could use their radio or mine. The test would be identical, but they would be under my conditions. This again raised some eyebrows and a few snickers. Remember, this was 30-plus years ago, and SAROC was the yearly meeting place for some of the best minds in the hobby. There were practically no store-bought radios then. We had to get old taxicab radios, police or fire department radios, and convert them down in frequency. Sometimes that even meant rewinding coils, changing capacitors across tuned circuits, etc. If you didn't have the smarts or didn't know someone that did, you didn't get on 2 meters FM, much less the 450 megahertz band. So someone immediately asked, okay, Art, what are the conditions? Let me digress for a moment here to explain how all this came about. There were two incidents, as I remember, that set me in the right path to this miracle. I was teaching a class in Rock Island, Illinois, every Saturday night, about 3 hours away after I closed the store, at normal driving speeds, but as some of you know, I'm not normal. I had cut the driving time down to just over 2 hours by pushing the speed limit in my new T-Bird. I also knew almost to the mile marker where I would lose the Chicago repeater. On one trip, I was just on the verge of losing the repeater when I saw an accident ahead. I pulled over and used the repeater to report the accident. Luckily, there were no injuries. The station that I was talking to commented that I had stopped in a good location as I was full quieting again.
Found a hotspot, I thought. A minute or so later, we had to call it quits as I was in the noise again. Oh well, similar events happened in the next few weeks, and I was really puzzled as to why. On the next trip to Rock Island, I happened to look out the window and was watching my shadow when the light bulb in my mind lit up. I had to try something when I got back home to prove my theory. We had just received a bunch of orange Dayglow fiberglass low-band motorcycle antennas with loading coils. I unscrewed my 5/8 wave antenna specialist's whip from its loading coil and screwed in the orange Dayglow whip. We got out the bird wattmeter, cut the whip to the best SWR, and called it quits. The next Saturday afternoon, I was pleasantly surprised to find that my range had indeed increased to the repeater. In relating this data to the SAROC group, one individual said, "Hey, let's cut off Art's drinks. He thinks he can convince us that the orange Dayglow fiberglass antenna radiates better than a stainless steel whip." After the laughing died down, I related again that the clue was watching the shadow of the car and the antenna. Part of the thin stainless steel antenna whip was basically bent back 90 degrees. Huh, what happens when you cross-polarize antennas? Remember, the repeater antenna is vertically polarized. You get approximately a 20 dB loss. Ding ding, the bell is ringing. Now you take back what you were also thinking about this story. I mean, article. Seriously, think about it. It's true. I don't know of any source of the orange Dayglow antennas anymore, and it's harder to find places that you can drive 90 miles per hour today without running into serious problems with the long arm of the law. However, if you really want to try this, it's fun, and you will blow a few minds if you don't tell anyone what you're doing. And there is a very simple solution. Try a couple of pieces of monofilament fishing line tied to the whip to hold it vertical. There is one more point to make. When we were all running tube-type armor-plated Motorola, GE, and RCA mobile radios, the SWR was not nearly as important as it is today. I think it was Pat Devlin from Tulsa that commented with some of the new rice boxes that had just started to come into the country. They might not be as tolerant as the tube types as far as high SWR was concerned, and with the stainless whips flopping around in the wind, the SWR would be all over the place and possibly burn out a lot of final transistors that were coming on board. Someone else commented that he had heard of shutdown circuits that kicked in when the SWR went out of sight. That could be true even today. If you are out west where the speed limits are not as strictly enforced and you get reports that you are cutting in and out, slow down and see if the condition changes. It very well could be the auto SWR detector is shutting down the power output to some degree to save the finals. That from Art Householder, K9 TRG of Elk Grove Village, Illinois. If you have an item you feel is worth a Rain read, please email it to Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. That's Hap, 1P, at rainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2007 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.